Into the bucket, lays it up and in.
Ball game, Rizzo!
Live in the NHR and Levine Accident Attorney Studios, this is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
This team is going to be tough when they finally get it together.
Sit back and relax. Let Russo and Rizzo take you home.
Oh, mercy!
Light him up, Colin!
We're at the midweek. We also have a little bit of college football playoff discussion to get to. We're a day removed from the NFL trade deadline. Ja Morant looking for a trade, maybe? Get him out of the Memphis Grizzlies. Got a lot to do, a lot to talk about, a lot of fun to be had. It's Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3. Colin Russo here. No Mike Rizzo today. We have Cade Shumsen this time around behind the glass over at the City Place Studios, where we're streaming on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter/X. At ESPN West Palm and ESPN South Florida. Also on the ESPN South Florida app. Got you up till 6 p.m. 888-760-3776. Number to get into the program today. Got a couple things to get to. We'll start with this because it is midweek. And this is the time of the week where we got to rank, we got to discuss, and we got to see who got what right and who got what wrong. And a couple things here. The first edition of the college football playoff rankings have been released. We are no longer going AP poll. We are now going to playoff rankings. So if the season ended today, what the committee is telling us is this is how they would do it. And it goes as follows. Well, here's the thing. The Big Ten round out the 1 and 2. A&M, Alabama, 3 and 4. University of Georgia and Ole Miss, 5 and 6. BYU and Texas Tech, two Big 12s before one ACC, 7 and 8. Oregon at 9. Notre Dame as the independent at 10. Texas and Oklahoma at 11 and 12. Then you round out past that. You get Utah, and then you get to the ACC schools, and you get 4 or 5. You got Virginia, the top of the bunch, then Louisville, then Georgia Tech, then Miami in that order. So there's a couple things that people have problems with in regard to this ranking. Most notably, what's going on with Notre Dame? Notre Dame is 6 and 2. They're sitting at 10. And Notre Dame's two losses are, as we remembered in the beginning of the year, they lost to Miami at Miami, 27-24, and they lost to Texas A&M at home, 41-40. People have a problem with that in regard to where Miami is ranked, who are sitting at 18 at 6 and 2. And Miami's two losses have come to the last three games. To Louisville at home, and then at SMU in overtime. So if you think about it out loud, hold on a second. Well, Notre Dame lost to Miami head-to-head. They get the same amount of losses, same amount of wins. One plays in a conference, one doesn't. Why the heck is Miami at 18 and Notre Dame at 10? Well, I'll tell you why. If they played the playoff, if they were establishing the playoff today, Notre Dame is in, Miami is out. Why is that the case? Because Notre Dame's two losses, I understand they're one of them is to Miami, but the other one's to Texas A&M. Where is Texas A&M on this list? Number three, where is SMU on this top 25? I can't find them. Where is Louisville? Louisville's at 15. So if we're looking at Miami here thinking, boy, is it more impressive to lose at home to Louisville and then on the road to SMU? Or would you be Notre Dame and lose the first two games of the year to two good opponents in their spot? Now, here's where you get into tricky territory. You get, all right, well, how much are we valuing the head-to-head? Shouldn't the head-to-head supersede everything? Versus, on the other side of things, who has a better resume? Notre Dame probably has better. Do they have a better resume? I guess it's debatable. But you got to give Notre Dame credit for one thing, is they've looked better recently comparatively to Miami. Notre Dame has good, better. Here's the one thing you have to admit. Notre Dame has better losses than Miami does. What are better losses? Losing to A&M is, I know it's at home, still a much better loss than losing to SMU on the road. It's an impossible spot. It's not going to be like this when the college football playoff committee actually has to make a decision. You're not going to be, Miami and or Notre Dame are both not going to be sitting there undefeated with two losses. It's not going to be that case. One or both of them are going to lose another game. And I'd put money on Miami, who still have to deal with Pitt and still have to deal with NC State, who are a pain in the rear end. But if it were to end today, you're going to have to flip a coin, but I don't think the committee got this wrong. I don't. I think that Notre Dame should be ahead of Miami, despite Miami beating them. because if we're going to judge everything on that first or second game of the season, then there's a lot of teams and a lot of past playoffs that would have gotten screwed. Clemson lost by about 100 points last year in week one to Georgia. Lost by about 100 points. They still made the playoff. You know, they won their championship. That's the reason they got in, but they still got in. You can't judge everything based on the head-to-head because there's too much transitive property here. Because if you're going to say, well, Miami beat Miami, how about this? Miami beat Notre Dame, so why are they below Notre Dame? And then to the same token, well, then you got to bring Louisville, and whoever Miami beats, then Louisville's got to be ahead of them. Because Louisville, despite them maybe losing another game, would have to drop down. Louisville has one loss, Miami has two. If Louisville were to lose another game, are you telling me that Louisville would still be ahead of Miami? You're wrong. Louisville would be below Miami. Louisville right now is at 15. Miami's at 18. That's where I stand. Kate Thompson behind the glass today. You think the committee got this wrong or right? You think they're establishing the right precedent by having Notre Dame ahead of Miami?
I think they are, for sure. Maybe not so high. I would have put Notre Dame closer to that 15 or 14 range, but the fact that they are ahead of them makes complete sense. I love the top nine for sure. It's 10, 11, and 12 where you could really have some questions depending on if you wanted to put one of those top ACC teams in there or maybe Utah a bit ahead of Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, Texas is playing fantastic right now, so it's they have some huge games coming up at the end of the season, most notably the last game of the year against undefeated currently Texas A&M.
And they still have Georgia.
So we're going to see a lot from Texas and see if Arch truly has developed as this season has gone. They're the team I'm looking forward to the most. But as an overall whole, for these first CFP rankings, I really like what the committee has done. These really won't change too much unless an unranked team really comes in and blows it open like what happened to Miami last year. But that's already happened to Miami this year. And I don't see necessarily Indiana's the one just because they haven't proven it to us before, whether they can hold on to this undefeated season for so long. They got Penn State coming up. Penn State, I know they've had one of the most historic, awful seasons for a top three ranked team, but that's another team you cannot take too lightly if you're Indiana. You got to make sure you press on all the way and you have to just lose to Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's think about this for a second. If we're going to pound Notre Dame here, but you got to give Notre Dame a little credit because, for one thing, they destroyed NC State, who beat Georgia Tech, and they destroyed Arkansas on the road. Arkansas, who, by the way, was in the game at the end of the game against Texas A&M and in the game at the end of the game against Ole Miss and in the game at the end of the game against Tennessee. You can't transitive property the whole thing. At some point, you're going to have to eye test and resume test it. Notre Dame has a better resume right now than Miami does. Miami has worse losses than Notre Dame does. Now, should the head-to-head supersede that regardless of anything? It's brought into context just like everything else. Because if we were just going to go off record, then it wouldn't be fair. If we were just going to go off head-to-heads, it wouldn't be fair. We got to mix it in. It's a piece of the pie. There's a pie chart of how much each matters. There's a 30% that will probably be for the head-to-head if it's available. Then it will be the strength of the conference. Then it will be the strength of the schedule, strength of wins, strength of losses, how they look recently, health. Ask Florida State about that. That's just a criteria of how they do it. And also, I mean, you know, you think it's Miami getting, you know, big dogged because they have a smaller market team? No, it's not that. Miami's a huge market. They're doing this because Miami's looked worse recently than Notre Dame. Way worse. Notre Dame's looked very good since losing to Texas A&M at home in a game they probably should have won. If one play goes differently, if the refs call a holding penalty on fourth down when Marcel Reed gets the touchdown, basically his time expires against Notre Dame on the road. There's a blatant holding penalty that they did not call offensively. They called that, we'd be having a much different conversation. Can you say the same about Miami, who threw away both games, SMU and Louisville? Threw it away. Miami looks worse. You can't sit here and try to make an argument to me that Miami belongs anywhere near that top 12. Nowhere near. Miami's not even going to finish the season with two losses. Let's call it like we see it, right?
No, yeah. And I honestly thought they would be ranked in the 20s to start this ranking off. I think they're actually a little too high.
Right. They've lost two of their last three. The Stanford game was competitive for the first half. And then the rest of the way, yeah, Virginia Tech stinks, Syracuse stinks. NC State and Pitt are going to be a pain in the rear end. And this is an ACC schedule. Miami's going to have, and you know, classic, this is a different Miami team. No, it's not. We said the same thing last year when they lost that last game of the year to Syracuse and ended their season. The same thing is going to happen again. So I'm not worried about Miami being left out of this because Miami doesn't deserve to be in this. No, there's no argument that you can make. 888-760-3776. The College Football Playoff Committee, get it right with their initial top 15. Once again, Ohio State 1, Indiana 2, Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, 4 in a row, 3 through 6. BYU and Texas Tech, how about that? Sitting at 7 and 8 respectively. Oregon at 9, Notre Dame at 10. Texas 11, Oklahoma 12, Utah 13, UVA 14, Louisville 15, and Miami's down there at 18. I sit here and say, should they be 10? Probably not. But I think everybody was under the same impression that if Notre Dame lost those first two games of the year and they won out, they would get in. We all knew this. So you can't act surprised when Notre Dame is going to be in that top 12. They have to drop one of these next couple games. We got to pray that Navy, which they never do, can compete against Notre Dame. We got to pray that going to Pitt will be a trap game for Notre Dame. Because then they finish off with Syracuse and Stanford, who stink. So Notre Dame's going to be in this. If I had to put money today, they're going to be in that playoff. Do I think it's the right thing? I hate Notre Dame. There is nothing I would like more than Notre Dame to be out of this. But Notre Dame is going to get in. I don't know about deserve a spot, but they're going to get in. So I just make my peace with it.
Last year changed a lot for me because I'm with you, just like Notre Dame never belongs, always a fraud.
One loss last year, but yes.
But when they came into the College Football Playoffs and they beat down on Georgia and then they beat down on, not beat down Penn State, but they rightfully beat Penn State.
Yeah, beat it fair and square.
Made to the national championship. It's like, okay, these guys have a little bit more credibility headed into 2025. I think that's actually a lot of what's swaying the CFP committee is that, okay, we know Notre Dame can play in these top spots. Miami can't. Miami never has, at least for the last two decades. So if you want to talk about teams who we know are going to step up when the moment
matters.
There's
a reputability attached to Notre Dame.
At least last year definitely helped out their case. Because prior to that, they really hadn't. They hadn't had a big game in a long time.
Yeah, I get a little nervous about doing that and putting a ton of stock. You're right. But I get a little nervous about putting a ton of stock into it because there's just so much turnover between team by team. Transfer portal. Notre Dame's one of the outliers that they usually keep guys around. But it's how that happens. You know, it's hard to judge last year's Penn State team and judge it to this year's Penn State team because how does it look? How does it look? It looks night and day different. So, but I understand. Notre Dame last year showed you that, hey, this is just not going to be a throwaway team that is just, you know, puts together a bad resume, sneaks into the playoff, and then gets beaten down. Notre Dame's good enough to compete with top teams. They showed that because they went head-to-head with Texas A&M, who is where? Oh, great. Number three. So you got to give them a little credit for the quality of losses comparatively to the quality of losses of Miami. Miami lost two games that they were favored in. Louisville might have been favored in that. No, they weren't favored because they're on the road. Miami was favored in every game. Sure, you want to beat Florida State? Congratulations. Florida, where's their head coach? USF was a good win. They beat them down. That's a good team in the American. Then they beat Notre Dame. That's it. That is it. This is not a good enough of a resume for me to cry and moan about this. It really isn't. And as for everybody else, if you're looking about who's going to get that second spot, so if we're talking about the 12-team college football playoff, you're going to have an outside Notre Dame in. You're going to have a group of five in. You're going to have one of each conference in. That's already six. And on top of that, you're going to have at least three other SEC teams. We're at nine. You're going to have another Big Ten team for sure that's 10. We're at two more. That's the real question. You know that Indiana and Ohio State are likely both going to get in, and you know that four of Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Texas, Oklahoma are all going to get in. You know that four are going to get in. There's no doubt. So we know that, and we know that an ACC champion and a Big 12 champion will get in. Now the question remains, there's two teams remaining. Where do they take them from? I don't think it's about what team. It's where do they get them from? Where do you get it from? The Big 12? Do you get it from the ACC? Do you get it from the SEC? Do you get it from the Big 10? That's where I would stand. Today, if this ended, Cade, tell me if you disagree. One SEC, one Big 12. That's how I'd do it. Am I wrong?
Yes, because you're excluding Oregon.
I would exclude Oregon in this.
Yeah, you can't do that. If their only loss this entire season is to undefeated Indiana, you cannot do that.
How about this? That alternative Big 12. Let's say Texas Tech is that team that wins the Big 12.
Okay.
BYU sole losses to Texas Tech in that game. You're going to keep BYU out?
I would, but
and,
I don't.
And Oregon did not play in a championship game.
You're correct.
That's the chaos that I'm going to root for.
You are correct.
That's the chaos I'd root for. In my opinion, Oregon might get it. That would be incorrect in my part. Because what are we going to sit here and say, oh, they play in the Big Ten? They play in the Big Ten. Let's see who Oregon has played. They've played Rutgers. They've played Wisconsin. They've played Penn State, who in their building, who fired their coach 3 games later. They played Oregon State, Northwestern, Oklahoma State, and Montana State. That is not murderer's row.
Here's the problem. And I forgot this in the moment, but I'm just now remembering. BYU and Texas Tech play each other this week.
That's right. Good point.
So that whole discussion is going to be off.
It still might be on because how much do you grade them playing the extra game? Let's say BYU loses this game. Let's say Texas Tech gets this game. BYU wins the rest on their schedule.
Well, then you don't take the other one into the – you don't take two. Here's what you need. You need BYU to win this game and then Texas Tech to win the Big 12 championship. Because BYU would have one loss.
Because that would be a bid stealer.
It would be a bid stealer. It's the same thing with Clemson beating SMU last year. It's the same thing.
Yeah, right. But here's the thing. Those were multi-loss. I mean, that Clemson team was a multi-loss team. SMU was – what they did last year is they set the criteria that if you play the extra game in the championship game, if you play – and that was SMU comparatively to the Alabamas of the world who didn't get to play the extra game. SMU, they're not going to punish you unless you get destroyed. They're not going to punish you too much about playing an extra game when your SEC, Big Ten counterpart are not going to play that extra game. So, for example, if BYU – win or lose the game this weekend against Texas Tech, if they are able to win or lose, they both get to the Big 12 championship game, are you going to punt? And it's a good game, and it's close, and one team does not get destroyed. You're really going to punish them in favor of a team like Oregon, who, by the way, for the rest of the season, has a pretty good schedule. Thinking out loud, they probably would give the favor to Oregon.
It's two losses versus one loss. If BYU loses twice to Texas Tech,
but with an extra game, that's my argument.
They're still out. You wouldn't
one loss out of conference versus one loss in the regular season, but with an extra loss in the Big 12.
I still think you would put Oregon in there. You'd put Oregon in there.
I don't know if I see. That's the thing. That's the thing. I don't know if I agree with.
If BYU,
it's going to be very eye test.
If BYU's only loss is the Big 12 championship, no matter what happens, BYU should be in. You need BYU to go undefeated, and it doesn't matter. If BYU goes undefeated in the regular season, it doesn't matter what happens in the Big 12 championship. They should be in.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. Whoever wins that Big 12 championship should get in. So I guess you're right. If there is a guarantee of a bid steal opportunity, you'd have to have you need BYU to win, and you have the non-BYU team to win that Big 12 championship game. That's what you need.
Yep.
Then a team would get screwed.
Because the CFP is going to want to put Texas in. They are going to look for an opportunity to put Texas in.
Texas is not going to get in. Texas has to beat Georgia, and then they have to beat A&M. Both of those miracles are not going to happen. So okay. I'm not even considering them right now because I really have to see it to believe it. And I know they're on bye right now, and they played well. They played great against Vanderbilt, up 34-10 at some point in the game. But the 2 games before that, they should have lost to Kentucky, and they should have lost to Mississippi State. I'd be blown away if that team was able to beat
Georgia. See, the chaos you're cheering for is for Texas to win out. I want to see what happens.
Texas wins out. Because
if Texas is good, I want to see them in.
Yeah, I'm out. I agree. It's a fun story because of the turnaround that they've had.
Yes.
But I just don't see it because of their schedule.
No, correct.
It's an impossible schedule to win. And comparatively, and we know we have Oklahoma sitting there. Oklahoma's at Alabama next week. And they already have 2 losses. 3 losses probably doesn't cut it here. So that's where teams like Oregon are the beneficiary of this because they play a USC. They play Washington, which is always a tough game. That will be the toughest game on their schedule. And then they play at Iowa. So at Iowa this weekend, if they could escape that, I don't think USC on the road is going to give them that much trouble. The real game is going to be that Washington game, last game of the year. Because Washington, keep this in mind too. Washington is another quiet team sitting at 23rd, and they haven't been ranked all year, essentially. And Washington is 6-2. And if they finish off their season playing who? Wisconsin, Purdue, UCLA. If they beat Oregon, that team might get a bid, right? That team might get a bid. They took down Illinois. They beat them easy. They lost big to Ohio State. And they had a terrible loss to Michigan. But if they go 2 losses and win out, and especially beating Oregon, how do you not put Washington in ahead of them? See, that's where their name recognition would really pull some weight. You want to talk about a head-to-head? That's the last game of the year. Then you got to take into consideration because the first game of the year and the last game of the year have different weights in terms of how the committee views it, as it should. It's a recency bias. Team playing at the beginning of the year is not the same as the team playing at the end of the year.
Definitely have some questions, but you have three other Big Ten teams ahead of Washington you have to consider. USC, Iowa, and Michigan. And
if USC and Iowa, who both play Oregon ahead of time, so keep that in mind, but yes.
And Michigan, who potentially could beat Ohio State for the fifth year in a row.
And Iowa and USC play each other. Keep that in mind.
Yep.
So they play each other, and they both play Oregon. So you got to assume that one of the three are going to get out of that with one loss.
That Michigan-Ohio State game is going to mean a lot because Michigan has Northwestern and Maryland left too. So sure. Michigan could also end with their only losses coming to Oklahoma and USC.
Here's what's – if we're talking
– man, Oregon, this is fun.
If Oregon does what he's supposed to – what Oregon does what they're supposed to do, and they're sitting there with one loss, and they're able to beat Iowa on the road, which would not be an easy game, and they're able to beat USC the week before Washington – we might be looking at the last week of the regular season for the Big Ten will be Indiana, who's locked in, Ohio State, who's locked in, but Michigan, Washington, and Oregon fighting for two spots. That might be what you're getting. Or fighting for maybe even one spot.
Yeah, because you got Notre Dame right there.
Because you have
the Big 12
because
issue.
You'd have Ohio State and Indiana in. They're probably not going more than three from the Big Ten, if I had to guess. They're not going to go more than three. I don't know if there's a fourth team that's going to give them a conversation unless there is a bid steal like Michigan beating Ohio State, because Ohio State's getting in regardless. That's where you start to make that discussion. I think that Washington-Oregon game, last game of the year, will be a win and go home. That will be, if Washington wins out in the show, they have an easy schedule, and if Oregon has the same way, that will be a win and go home.
I don't think Washington gets back from 23 ranks down.
Yeah, here's the thing.
They would bring a second ACC team in.
Which is crazy because then we're just at the mercy of where they rank them at this point in the season, you know? Because if, let's say, what's the difference between Washington at 23 and Notre Dame at 10? Let's be honest.
Here's the thing. I'm just also taking from history. Last year, when week one rankings came out,
right,
compare that to the end of the season, only one team was different, and that was Clemson and Miami. That's it.
But
all other 11 teams stay the same.
Yeah, they don't like to admit when they're wrong, and I understand that.
That's what I'm saying.
But
you and I could think about this completely differently, but the CFP rankings have thought about what their decision is, and it's going to take a lot to stray them from it.
If you're going to want to play this objectively, Washington, Michigan, Iowa, and USC all have opportunities to get in. The good news is Iowa, USC, and Oregon all play each other within a span of 2 weeks. Iowa plays at USC on November 15th, and then USC is going to be at Oregon the next week. So you're going to actually have teams beat down each other a little bit. Once you get to three losses, you're out. But Washington and Michigan are the two teams that have opportunities to jump into the fold and give the committee something to think about. Because the committee not only wants a Big Ten team in, they're going to want a big name market brand team in. If Michigan's able to beat Ohio State again, there's a very good chance that they'll be in. If Washington wins out and beats Oregon, there's a very good chance that Washington's in. Now, the question is, to follow this up and finish this off, let's put this hypothetical out there. Michigan is at 7-2 right now. They're ranked 21. They play Northwestern, Maryland, and Ohio State to finish the year. Let's say they win those first two. Washington, on the other hand, has a easy schedule as well. Wisconsin, Purdue, they should kill both of those teams. And then UCLA, the flame might have fanned on that one. So those are three games. Let's say they win those three games. Let's assume, big assumption, that Oregon's able to get through this pretty gauntlet that they had the last four games. They're able to get through Iowa, Minnesota, and USC, who are all pretty good teams. Let's say they're able to do that. At the end of the year, Indiana's in, Ohio State's in. Lock it. If Washington beats Oregon and Michigan beats Ohio State, do you put in four Big Ten teams? Because Michigan would deserve a spot over the win over the number one team in the country.
Yep.
And on the other side of things, Washington beats Oregon is a 2-loss, 10-win Big Ten team who has a huge win on their resume over Oregon. And that game was where? In Washington.
So you put in you would four. Put, you would put
my both, thinking is they'd put four Big Ten teams in.
You would put both of those over Oregon. You would put both of those over what we're assuming is going to be a 3-loss Texas team. If Texas wins out, they're in. That's without question. Right?
Let's assume that they're going to stick. If they're going to stick at four SEC, which is my guess today.
Which we're assuming is Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss. Okay.
Correct.
So there's four. The Ohio State, Indiana,
if you add
there's
the
six.
If you add the Notre Dame, the group of five, then we're at six. Then you add the four more hypotheticals from the Big Ten, that's 10. And then you'd add ACC and Big 12, one apiece.
100%, because if you have a two-loss, the only question...
That's what I would do.
The only question...
Is that BYU game.
Is the BYU game. If BYU goes undefeated and they only have one loss, including...
Then you got to cut out one of those teams, and the cutout team would be Washington. That would be
because they have the... They have
it's
the
not as good of a win as Michigan. They would cut out Washington.
You'd put it in Michigan. Yeah, 100%.
How about that? There's a hypothetical. Cade and I just went through the whole thing. If you want to talk about the Big Ten specifically and how it could basically combust if they can put, really make the committee have to make some tough decisions, that's what you need to happen. You need Washington to win out until the last game of the year. You need Michigan to win out until the last game of the year. You need Oregon to survive their gauntlet, and then you got some decisions to make. That's where it's going to be fun. And as for the SEC, too early to say because all these teams play each other. Oklahoma has Alabama. Oklahoma still has to play LSU. You know, Texas still has to play Georgia. Texas still has to play A&M. All these teams play each other. The only one who has an easy schedule the rest of the way is Ole Miss. Ole Miss is likely good. Hell or high water, Ole Miss is likely okay. Texas A&M, if they are able to beat Missouri at Missouri this weekend, which they should, they're likely okay too. Everybody else, jury's still out. We'll see what happens. 888-760-3776. Should the committee put in more than two, more than three, or four Big Ten teams in that 12-team college football playoff? Does that conference even deserve it? Based on our hypotheticals, who do you think deserves the most bids into that college football playoff? Kate Chums and Colin Russo, Russo and Rizzo. Download the app today, the ESPN South Florida app on the App Store. It's free to download, and you can catch Russo and Rizzo just from about anywhere. You can catch, theoretically speaking, from 2 to 4 weekdays. You can catch our podcast format. So listen back to shows. Listen to Inter-Miami games, English and Spanish side. It's on the app. Listen to the Florida Panthers on their quest for a three-peat. You can do that right on the app. All your beats for South Florida sports, including high school football, from throughout Palm Beach County and the Treasure Coast in one place, the ESPN South Florida app. Russo and Rizzo, take a time out here on ESPN 106.3.
Live from the Anajar... Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Well, this college football talk's got me jazzed up for the Boca Raton Bowl. The 2025 Boca Raton Bowl is kicking off its 12th year. It's Tuesday, December 23rd, 2 p.m., Flagler Credit Union Stadium. The game is going to air on ESPN. It's going to have two of the biggest and best teams from the group of five that are going to battle it out for their chance at the title. More information can be found at BocaRatonBowl.com. Follow along on Twitter at Boca Bowl and Facebook.com/Boca Bowl for more updates as we inch closer to the 2025 Boca Raton Bowl, Tuesday, December 23rd, Flagler Credit Union Stadium. Colin Russo and Cade Chumsen with you streaming live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter /X at ESPN West Palm and ESPN South Florida. 888-760-3776, number to get into the program. What did the committee get right? What did the committee get wrong? Should Notre Dame get into the college football playoff if they go in at 10-2? With only two losses. One hypothetical that we did not bring up. We got to consider a couple of things here. Georgia Tech just lost their first game of the season over the weekend to NC State. Georgia Tech has been undefeated up until that point. Georgia Tech, the rest of the way, has to play Boston College, Pitt at home, which would be a good game, a very good game, actually. And then they finish it off with their rivalry game against Georgia. It's home this year. We remember last year, that 4 overtime game. It was an incredible back-and-forth affair. Georgia Tech always goes hard in that game. And Georgia, on the other hand, it's an out-of-conference, so it will not impact their ability to get into the SEC or ACC championships respectively. But it adds a little caveat. If Georgia Tech gets it, all of a sudden is a one-loss Georgia Tech team with a win against Georgia, they get, and if they're only one loss, they would get into the ACC championship game. And let's throw out the hypothetical that Virginia... Let's really make some chaos. Virginia, who hasn't lost a game in conference, who lost one game to NC State out of conference, technically, because they scheduled it in the preseason. If Virginia, who, by the way, plays only Wake Forest, Duke, and Virginia Tech the rest of the year. If Virginia goes undefeated, comes out of this at 11-1. Georgia Tech, on the other hand, comes out of this 11-1 with a win over Georgia Tech. Can you make the argument that both those teams get in?
You definitely can. And actually, real quick, to correct your game about Georgia last year. That was an 8 overtime game. Oh,
that's
game.
Right. I was thinking of the Texas A&M Auburn game.
You were a crazy game last year.
I remember it was 2 hours
Georgia.
Longer than when it finished.
100%. So Georgia Tech is going to come out for blood against Georgia, who is once again vulnerable.
It's just always going to be a tough game. That's always going to be a good
100%.
Game.
I definitely think you could make the argument for two ACC teams. And I think that would actually help out the committee from getting so much backlash. If you're going to put...
Well, they put two ACC teams in there last year, and it didn't work out.
No, because, I mean, let's be honest, neither of them really had that firepower. I think Georgia Tech can make it. I think Georgia Tech has the...
There's a question of can or they have to make it. If they beat Georgia and they're a one-loss team, they have to make it. They have to make it.
What I'm saying is, in a playoff-type moment, we've seen Georgia Tech have some of the greatest ACC championship upsets of all time. They have a history of blowing up great teams that SMU, and let's be frankly, Clemson, never have done. Clemson's always been in it or favorites. Never had that underdog mentality. Georgia Tech has had that for basically their entire program's history. So to see them in the college football playoffs would be outstanding, I think, for the ACC in particular. But if you're right, if Virginia Tech goes undefeated in their conference and plays a good tight game against Georgia Tech and let's just say loses, then you could make a serious case for Virginia to be in, not Tech.
Right, because Virginia, on one end, they don't have the best of schedules in terms of strength of opponent, but if that's going to be the team that wins that ACC championship, what are you going to say to them? You get there, you're going to say you're in. And then what are you going to say to Georgia Tech, who played an extra game? This is exactly what the SMU situation was, but it's like if SMU have beaten Georgia head-to-head. That's where the caveat comes in, because Georgia Tech has a huge strength of quality win on the schedule if they're able to do that. They're able, and outside of that, Georgia Tech hasn't done a whole lot. They're basically escaping every game they play. That adds a caveat. So here's what we need to root for. In conclusion, Cade, here's what we need. We need Virginia to win every game on the rest of their schedule and get to the ACC championship game. We need Georgia Tech to not lose Pitt and beat Georgia. That's what we need. On top of that, we need, on the Big Ten side, Michigan to win the rest of their games, Washington to win the rest of their games, Michigan to upset Ohio State in the game, which they've won every year, and then Washington, always a good game on that front as well, to beat Oregon the last game of the year. That's what we need, because then you'd have four Big Ten teams with a real strength and purpose of getting it, and on top of that, we need BYU to win this weekend, and then whoever the Big 12 champion or the Big 12 other team is in the championship game to beat BYU in the championship game to secure a bid steal.
We want as many teams as possible to be at one or two losses. Three losses, it's clear that they're out.
And I remember we did this last year, and then a lot of those teams sort of fell on their face the last couple of weeks because there's a lot of pressure in these games now. Teams understand whether they're a spoiler or a contender now. So now you're trying to fight either for bowl eligibility just to spoil the season of the other team, or you're fighting for postseason contention. That's the three subcategories. If you're going to put it together, what do they call it? The Venn diagram, the pie charts. You're going to put that together. It's going to be those three. Are you a spoiler? Do you want to get to a bowl game? Or are you in a postseason contender? That's what we need. That's what we need. So if that happens, I don't know what the committee is going to do. Because I'll tell you one thing that's never going to happen. You're not putting in less than four SEC teams. You're not doing that. That's the SEC will leave college football if you do that. You're not getting away with that again. I think this is going to be the four-bid SEC year. I don't see another way around it. I really don't. It was like this last year with the Big Ten. It's going to be like this year with the SEC. They're going to get four. They should. They deserve to get four. Alabama deserves to get in. Ole Miss deserves to get in. Georgia is spotty, but they're going to deserve to get in. And A&M. You can make an argument that A&M has got the toughest strength of schedule of anybody. I don't know. Let's root for that, Cade. That's what we want. And if there is a conference in terms of lineup to get screwed, let me save you the suspense. It's called the Big 12. If you want to get screwed, they had no reason last year. If there's a conference that's going to get screwed, it's going to be the Big 12. And I know they didn't screw over the ACC. They're still in the running as well. I'd actually make the argument today that the Big 12 teams are more impressive than the ACC teams. I'd make that argument.
Well, the CFP rankings say so.
It does. But I think in the when it comes down to it, the College Football Playoff Committee would want an ACC-level team over a Big 12 team if they had to make the choice. Unless the resumes were that much drastically different, I think that's the choice they would want. Because the meat of the ACC is probably better than the meat of the Big 12, but the top of the Big 12 is better than the top of the ACC. Bizarre. It's an impossible spot. It's an impossible situation to manage, but that's why it's fun. The College Football Playoff, which is not only a number of weeks away from actually seeing where it's going to be ranked, but with Cade Chumsden and myself, Colin Russo, we know that the College Football Playoff Committee had put it at number one, Ohio State, number two, Indiana, number three, Texas A&M, number four, Alabama, number five, Georgia, six, Ole Miss, seven and eight, BYU and Texas Tech, who play each other this weekend, Oregon and Notre Dame, and Texas and Oklahoma. The one thing I would say to finish this off is keep this in mind when they do the rankings. There's a reason why certain teams are where they are, and then you just got to take a look at their schedule and see how the TV networks feel about it. BYU and Texas Tech, would they be 7-8 right next to each other any other week? Or would they only be it the week that they're playing each other? There's a marketability attached to these rankings. They want to put teams that have big games higher than teams that don't because it makes the matchup look better. More people, more eyes on it. That's just the truth. They did that when Michigan snuck into the top 25 over USC, who USC pummeled, and Michigan was playing at Michigan State on NBC on Saturday night. They're just trying to project a rating. They're trying to get people to watch. That's all they're caring about there. You can take that into consideration with these early rankings. You can't overreact to it, but I'm just playing the schedule game. That's what can happen. Colin Russo, Cade Chumsden with you. If you've been in a car accident, truck accident, suffered a slip and fall, my friends Mark Anajar and Glenn Levine at Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys, they're here to fight for you. They don't even charge you unless you win. They work tirelessly to get you the maximum compensation that you deserve. Well, don't settle for just any attorney. Demand the best. Demand Anajar and Levine today because that's the Anajar and Levine difference. Take that one phone call and take back control of your life. Don't wait. Call for the free consultation today. Call 1-800-747-FREE. 1-800-747-3733. Take back control to Anajar and Levine. Russo and Rizzo will take a time out here on ESPN 106.3.
She ain't gon' tie me down. How you wanna roll? Got it on the shirts, all the hats, all the clothes. What you want right now? What up right now?
Let's get back to the Anajar and Levine Accident Attorney Studios. This is Russo and Rizzo on ESPN 106.3.
Well, listen up. If you're an athlete and you're trying to take the next level in your fitness journey, you got to understand that not only is it just getting up in the morning and doing the work and doing the hour workout, running, doing whatever you got to do to make sure physically you're on top of it. It's actually how you give yourself nutrition. What's your fuel? What do you do day to day to make sure that your body has the right nutrients, the right vitamins that it needs to operate at its best ability? Well, you got to go to a place like VitaCost Sports Certified Marketplace, which is built for athletes and fitness enthusiasts who understand that training hard and really understand the benefits of what clean supplementation and nutrition can do for you. Whether you're prepping for a triathlon, you're training for a race, you're trying to get a little bit more health conscious, VitaCost is your go-to for taking that next step in your fitness journey. Their sports certified marketplace, they got over 400 performance-enhancing supplements that are all certified, which means that they're free of any banned substances and they help you level up your game. Visit VitaCost.com/sport-certified to make your purchase today and use the code ESPN20 for 20% off. That's code ESPN20. Level up your game today at VitaCost. Damian Prez, hockey sup for Cade Chumsden. Damian Prez, welcome into the program. How are you doing today?
Going on. Little switcheroony, little sub here at midday afternoon right before the 5 p.m. hour. How you doing?
Not bad. And I got to tell you a little story here. So I was at earlier today, I was over at Cacti Park at the Palm Beaches where the Houston Astros and the Washington Nationals do their spring training. And I was at one of those things, call it a career fair. It's with the Junior Achievement Association down here in West Palm Beach. And they have 2,000 middle schoolers and high schoolers come to the park and you basically walk around the concourse all around the park.
Right.
And so I was set up. I had the desk, our ESPN West Palm sports desk set up. I had a tent set up. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. Some of these other people had pamphlets, cards, gifts, T-shirts, toys, you know, the people can.
Yeah, yeah, the marketing items.
The marketing items.
Yeah.
Let's just say ESPN West Palm had none of that. And it was an empty desk with me and Andrew Crosby, who's a marketing facilitator of ours, who's, you know, my age, but, you know, a sports fan. So we went in there knowing that we didn't make a mistake, but not bring anything. But it's one of those things where you want to, if people want to talk about getting into sports, that, you know, trying to be productive, member of society, fine. We show up and there's about 9,000 kids. And we're set up the desk, we set up the tent, and a couple things. Number one, it's the thing I always did is I would ask, hey, what's your team? What's your sport? What do you like watching? What do you play?
Right, little icebreaker.
Icebreaker. They would tell me, all right, this, that, and the other. And hopefully, most times, unless they're doing soccer, which I'm not great at, if they give me a team of most of those sports, I could usually have a conversation with them. But there was one. Now, tell me if I'm wrong here. There's a couple. Number one. There was this young girl who's in middle school, I believe 7th or 8th grade, comes up, starts telling me she's a hockey fan. All right, you're a hockey fan. Who's your team? Islanders. All right, I like the Islanders too. Tell me like how you become a fan, whatever. And she's telling me about the Islanders. I start realizing this middle school girl has a lot of Islanders knowledge. I'm like, I'm impressed.
She's like a real, real fan.
So, you know, me, I'm just like, all right, let's see how much knowledge you have. All right. I'm like, all right, the Islanders. Tell me a little bit about their Stanley Cup championships. And she goes, well, about the four straight in 1980? I'm like, oh, okay.
And you said this was a middle schooler?
She must have been, 13. I don't know. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, all right. How many did they win in the row? She goes, four. And she goes, okay. I'm like, who'd they beat in the last one? She goes, the Oilers in 7. I'm like, oh.
Interesting. Like, she probably could have taught you something here.
I'm like, all right. Well, who was on those teams, these Oilers teams? She goes, what, the Gretzky teams? I'm like, what? What?
That's incredible, honestly.
I'm like, what'd they do the next year after 83? She goes, they went to the Stanley Cup final. They lost. I'm like, to who? She goes, the Oilers. I'm like, oh my God. I'm looking at Andrew. I'm like, who is this? Like, are we hiring? Oh my God.
Future intern right there.
And it was that was one person I was impressed with because, like, I'm like, that is me at middle school age. I don't even know if I would know something. I would never know something like that. That's crazy. And so that gave me a little confidence because there are some people you talk to them like, oh my God, the screenagers, are we doomed? Like, you know, the next generation.
Right.
And there's some people where you talk to and you're like, wow, that's, you are smart.
I did not expect that.
You're sharp. She was breaking down the 1980s Islanders teams with me. And then she was breaking down the current Islanders teams with me. So this is where I have some fun. And I don't know if this is the right thing to do. So at this point, you know, you're just talking sports. So people gravitate towards our table because some of them are like, you know, a little bit more corporate at this career fair.
Easier to recognize.
So, yeah, right. They like they see ESPN. And you know how many times I got asked if I host SportsCenter today? A number of times. But they would come up and we just hold court. We'd be talking sports. That's really all we did. We just talk sports with these kids. And so we're talking about the Islanders and everybody else has chimed in. There must be, I'm not even being crazy. 20 to 25 people at middle schoolers.
You're getting a little crowd here.
We're having a crowd. And so I start telling her about the 80s Islanders teams. I'm like, you know who's on those teams? Ken Morrow. And she goes, all right, so this is where I got her. I'm like, all right, Ken Morrow, you're going to have to help me here. All right, Ken Morrow was on those four Islanders teams. And you know what other team he was on? And he joined the Islanders right after he did it was the 1980 Olympic team that beat the Soviet Union. And a number of people who were listening, nothing like clicked. Miracle. Oh, you know, right. Oh, wow. One of the great moments in American
sports
history.
That is an older movie.
But point being is they weren't like, it didn't sound like it was clicking. So I'm like, all right, guys, history lesson. Huddle up. You don't know about the 1980 Olympic team? All right, so here's what happened. There were teachers walking by and we're trying to explain the political tension between the United States and the Soviet Union.
To middle schoolers.
And we're telling them, hey, so here's what happened. There was something called the Cold War. Raise your hands. Anybody? Nobody. All right. Cold War is when the Soviet Union for about a 30-year period.
So do they not teach like history? Yeah,
they're middle
anymore?
Schoolers. I said you guys are going to get there eventually. I mean, I'm sure they're doing like, this is like sixth, seventh, eighth graders. Some of them know the Cold War, but it didn't sound like a lot of them could break it down to me. But I'm like, all right, so political tensions. We're breaking down. All right, so some threats from the Soviet Union to the United States. You know, the missile crisis. This that it was in the 60s. Then we get to the 70s, and then I didn't get into the 72 Munich games. And then we get into the 1980. I'm like, all right, so political tensions were high. So therefore, this was a big event. The Soviet team, I was talking about, like, you know, one of the great Soviet Olympic teams they've ever had. It was one of the big Goliaths of sporting history in the Olympics. And I'm basically telling this ragtag group of college kids, coached by Herb Brooks, you know, you get a Ruzioni, Jim Craig, O'Callaghan, all those guys. And I'm basically explaining to them the political tensions surrounding the game. And they'd have teachers, you know, middle school teachers, walking by in the background. What's all the fuss over here? And like listening to me out of context, basically say, well, the Soviet Union didn't like the United States because of this. But the United States did also that. So that's why
they probably had no idea this was related to
sports.
Was
I wrong to explain the Cold War to a bunch of 13-year-olds?
You're not wrong because it's history. They're going to learn it eventually. And it was tied to the sports. I mean, that was a big part of the Olympics that year. The tensions that we had.
It's one of the great American triumphs.
Right. But it's good to see sports do it in a peaceful way, in a sense. So maybe that's a bright side of it.
Because I was thinking, because I would get weird looks from these teachers. They're like, what are you doing? What is going on over here? We're at a career fair. I don't need a Cold War breakdown. But I can't help myself when you get into moments like that where you can teach them.
Right, and the conversation's flowing.
And I circled back to Ken Mara, who was on that Olympic team and won it in February and then went and joined the Islanders and then won the Stanley Cup in June and then all of a sudden won four straight. So I was just talking about that. I thought that was cool. Nonetheless, I didn't know if it was the right thing or wrong thing to teach a bunch of middle schoolers at a career fair about the political tensions and of the Cold War over that 30-year period. I didn't know if that was the wrong thing to do. And outside of that, you know, some kids would go up, hey, you a sports fan? I don't watch sports. Okay, this is the ESPN tent. And then there'd be other kids that come up who are niche sports fans. We had these four Suns fans who came up, Phoenix Suns. And I'll tell you, there's this one kid, and I asked him about the 1976 NBA Finals between the Suns and the Celtics.
No idea.
No. He knew a lot about it.
Wow.
He knew a lot about it. He knew where Devin Booker was from, what high school he went to, what college he went to, where he went in the draft. He knew how many his stats, all that stuff. This kid knew everything about the Suns.
Big Suns fan.
I even asked him about the Paul Westphal teams in 76 against the Celtics and one of the great NBA games ever played. I believe it was game four. It might have been game five in the 1976. It was a quadruple overtime game. The kid knew about it. I'm like, no way you know about this game.
Your expectations were honestly like so low for these kids.
Damien, 1976.
No, honestly, that's impressive though. That's very impressive.
1976, really?
That's very, especially like for his age too, because they're even younger than us. So.
Right. I was a little blown away that there were a middle schooler out there who knew about Paul Westphal and the Phoenix Suns. I was a little surprised by that. And I didn't know if I was, and I would be sit there. I'd be dumbfounded. I had more fun than they did because I was just learning. All right, who knows their sports? Who knows what's going on here?
You're almost betting these kids.
And there were Heat fans there, and we'd be quizzing them on the Heat, and then we'd be quizzing them on their specific teams. It was some of them, and these kids were born. I checked some of them born in 2012.
It's unbelievable.
2012, 2011.
Those are real fans right there.
That made me sick. I don't usually get that, oh, I feel old moment. I felt old there. That I didn't like. But I didn't know whether quizzing kids, middle schoolers, on the 1976 Phoenix Suns team was the right mode of action or to further explain the Cold War political tensions surrounding the 1980 Olympic team. I don't know. Would you be on top of things if you rolled across career fair when you were 13, 14 years old? Would you have a niche sports topic you'd be able to do stuff like that in?
Well, if you consider soccer a niche sport.
Right. Well, and it's not a niche sport, but like you would be able to do soccer history. You really get into the Diamond Dozen.
But like down to the 70s, probably not. Right. Probably not.
It just goes to show. And you know me, Steph, you a basketball fan? Yeah, I love the NBA. Who's your favorite team? Golden State. Everybody.
Right.
Everybody. I was blown away by that. This is me just like, I guess I don't talk to middle schoolers and gauge what they're curious about sports other than the kids I coach in basketball. They're all Steph Curry fans. They're all Steph Curry fans.
I feel like he's
and they all hate Gilgeous Alexander. They hate him.
Why? Because he's a free throw
merchant? They don't like the fouls.
Yeah.
They don't like the fouls.
I can see that. But I feel like Steph Curry, it's not easy to replicate what he does. But if you're a kid that age, I mean, you obviously can't run and dunk it from the free throw line. So, you know, chucking it up from three is kind of what they do.
Couple things there I was just really surprised at. Number one, that one middle school student who, and she openly said, I only like hockey. and she knew everything about the Islanders. Everything about the Islanders. Telling me about their third line. I'm like, come on. Really? Breaking down the 1983 Game 7 between the Islanders and the Oilers? Come on. No way.
That took research at some point.
I was very blown away by that. I had to tell that story. I don't know. But I had a good time other than that. It was fun. I had a great time because of that. That was great. I like talking sports. And you get to gauge. And there's certain people that walk by and you're thinking, boy, oh boy, are we in trouble? You know, the screens and the social skills. Right. I'm like, guys, we need to practice. Practice.
Get off the screens. That's the main thing, honestly.
That's why there are times where I get nervous. Oh, boy. And some people say that about my generation, you know, my age group. Are we in trouble? We might be in trouble.
You're starting to buy in.
We'll do a little 5 and 5. That's Damian Prez, Colin Russo, Russo and Rizzo. We'll take a time out here on the other side. We get the 5 p.m. hour presented by Good Greek Moving and Storage. All to come right here on Russo and Rizzo, ESPN 106.3.